Judge Bauer and I are very pleased to be joined this morning for argument by Judge Griesbach from the Green Bay Division of the Eastern District of Wisconsin District Court. He is sitting with us by designation this morning. Welcome, Judge Griesbach.
Thank you.
And with those pleasantries taken care of, we'll call our first case for this morning. And I don't mean to suggest that we're going to be unpleasant for the rest of the morning, but the first case this morning is Matrix Incorporated versus American National Bank. Mr. Queenie.
May it please this honorable court, counsel for appellees. My name is Robert Queenie. I represent Matrix 4. Matrix 4 is a manufacturer of plastic injection molding products. If one were to attempt to visualize that, it makes, for example, plastic shoeboxes you might insert below your bed. Matrix 4 was the victim of a build-up and bust-out scheme that has long been decried by this court in, for example, the Sutliff case. In the 2001-2002 period, Matrix lost over $7 million pursuant to this build-up and bust-out scheme, perpetrated initially and primarily by a company called Stylemaster. Stylemaster went into bankruptcy in March of 2002, leaving Matrix with its $7 million plus trade credit. Stylemaster also injured other individuals, other companies like Paramount Plastics. In August of 2002, Matrix sued the principals of Stylemaster in a RICO complaint. That case is 02C5609. The RICO complaint in that case has been sustained, and it remains intact and pending before Judge Norgel in the district court. The substance of that RICO claim that remains since 2002 is essentially the inventory buildup and bust-out scheme that occurred prior to Stylemaster's filing of bankruptcy in March of 2002. Subsequently, in 2006, based upon information gained pursuant to that other case, RICO 1, if you would, Matrix sued both American National Bank, its successor is now J.P. Morgan Chase, and Gateway. American National Bank was the lender that induced and facilitated the credit fraud-based inventory scheme perpetrated by Stylemaster and by its co-conspirator, American National Bank. Gateway is a LLC created by the principals of Stylemaster. It owns what used to be the Silver Shovel piece of property in Chicago, and it's the major recipient of the build-out and bust-out scheme perpetrated by the principals, who are the major owners of Gateway. That claim differs qualitatively from the claim in the prior RICO 1 case pending before Judge Norgel, in the sense that it's based heavily upon both pre- and post-filing fraud. It's, for example, based upon the fraud upon what we believe to be the bankruptcy court with respect to American National Bank's misrepresentation that they had standing to pursue an adversary proceeding against Matrix. It's also materially based upon a continuing round and pattern, if you will, of fraud committed by Stylemaster's successor, JR Plastics, that is set forth in our amended complaint. In this case, injured any number of additional people in the 2002 and 2003-2005 period, including Matrix. So while the first RICO case is based upon a pre-filing inventory scheme, the second RICO case, the one before your honors, is based upon both that same pre-filing scheme, but as set forth and furthered from 2002 post-filing through 2005.
But the essence of the fraudulent scheme that's alleged was heavily litigated in the bankruptcy adversary proceeding on the lien priority issue. And that's in part what the district court based the res judicata ruling in this case.
And I believe the district court is erroneous with respect to that because, for example, there are two foci of alleged litigation. And the first one is the sale that occurred in April of 2002. There was no litigation of any fraud claim filed by Matrix with respect to that sale. And in particular, when Matrix raised it orally in a hearing in March of 2002, the bankruptcy court openly and expressly precluded any evidence as to any fraud, any argument as to any fraud, because there had not been filed any sort of a pleading. When Matrix then filed a motion to dismiss...
The fraud allegations were heavily litigated in the context of the opposition to the sale and also in the lien priority adversary.
I don't believe they were. If you look very carefully at the underlying documents, and for example, the district court opinion from Judge Aspin of August 6, 2007, explicitly notes that the fraud was raised with respect to a motion for summary judgment. It was then withdrawn with respect to the equitable subordination defense. The district court's opinion is that the fraud was actually litigated on its merits to a final judgment with respect to the equitable subordination defense. That's not true. The fraud claim was withdrawn and not made and not argued and not litigated.
Well, isn't it implicit in the rejection of equitable subordination that the fraud allegations were rejected?
No, because the fraud allegations had by this time had been pled in RICO number one before Judge Norgal. So not to duplicate those pleadings, the equitable subordination defense does not include an allegation as to, for example, which is what the district court found. District court said that we litigated the bank's collusion. That's a key word. That collusion is alleged in RICO 1. It's not alleged in our equitable subordination defense. What's alleged in equitable subordination is what both courts have found. If you look at the October 2005 bankruptcy order, if you look at the district court's order of August 6, they are both very clear. There's no wrongdoing alleged or alluded to. And in the bankruptcy court's opinion, all it was a bank protecting itself in a proper fashion. There's no allegation in the equitable subordination defense of any wrongdoing, let alone any bank collusion, let alone any fraud.
Well, what was the defense based on?
The defense was based upon Stalmaster's misconduct. It was based upon the bank's negligence in certain capacities, and it was based upon what was found by the district court.
Negligence can't be a basis for equitable subordination.
That's why it was denied. That's why it was denied, and that's why we...
So you're admitting you asserted a frivolous defense in the equitable subordination claim?
No.
It was all about the fraudulent scheme.
If, for example, we had alleged in the equitable subordination defense what we alleged in front of Judge Norgal, there would not be a ruling striking the equitable subordination defense. It's just that simple. If we had alleged the fraud, if we had alleged the RICO that was alleged before Judge Norgal in front of the bankruptcy court could not have stricken the equitable subordination defense.
Didn't you initially make such allegations, though, when you were contesting the sale?
No. We made them in a motion to dismiss
the reconsideration.
And that motion was continued until after the sale. And that motion was then withdrawn voluntarily in May of 2002. And it led to or rolled into the RICO case that was filed 6 weeks later. So with respect to the sale, it's clear from my brief. If you go through, it's clear from the motions or clear from the record, it was not argued on its merits in front of the bankruptcy court at all. And what the court found in May of 2002 was that our motion to reconsider did not address the sale at all. So therefore, it was not going to be considered. The motion to dismiss that had been continued until the middle of May had an allegation of fraud. That motion was voluntarily dismissed.
So you're arguing that you didn't actually litigate these issues, but also claim preclusion would apply to claims that could have been litigated and should have been litigated in the bankruptcy proceedings.
What I'm arguing is that I believe with respect to what could have been argued, that's taken care of and resolved by Barnett versus Stern.
A decision the district court did not address.
Did not address, and that's remarkable in the sense that it was a major portion of my brief in objection to the motion for judgment on the pleadings. It was not addressed by American National Bank. They addressed only Metalife, Metalwood. I came back and said, well, I think Barnett versus Stern resolves this issue.
How so? These were core proceedings.
Well, I don't believe that they were core proceedings. I think if you look at the case that the Howell case, for example, that's right on point. That is the same kind of build-up and bust-out scheme as this case. And that case was carefully analyzed, adopted by this court. That is a lien case. That is a build-em-up, bust-em-out scheme case. And that case, for example, expressly holds that RICO is not the same thing as equitable subordination. It says that. It also holds, just like Stern, that the fact that the RICO case comes out of the same transaction does not mean that it's barred by Rule 13. Both of those cases expressly acknowledge that the guts, the core of the RICO, was in fact litigated, could have been litigated in the initial claim.
How does that argument square with the Metal Woods Corporation case and also with Croner? Metal Woods was before Barnett and Croner was after.
I'm not familiar with Croner, although I generally recall that it repeats what I believe to be, it acknowledges Stern. As far as Metal Woods, if you read that case, it's quite clear that the case is concerned about finality. And rightly so. Rightly so. But that's not our case. Our case doesn't allege that the sale was rigged. It doesn't allege that anybody was in cahoots, which is what Metal Woods says. We're not suing the people for what they did or didn't do with respect to the sale. We're suing the bank with respect to the pre-filing fraud and the post-filing fraud. There's only one mention of the sale. It's in paragraph 96. It doesn't allege anything, any wrongdoing with respect to sale. So that distinguishes like Metal Wood.
Well, I'm not sure that's dispositive because the res judicata inquiry looks at the transactional facts. And if they're all the same, then your claim should have been brought in the bankruptcy court.
I don't believe the claims are the same. We didn't learn about the claim against American National Bank until late in 2005 when they admitted their fraud upon the bankruptcy court. What they told us in 2002 was that they had never transferred the assets, the assets had never been transferred from Stylemaster to JRP, and so therefore they had a lien, and so therefore they had standing. The bankruptcy court never had subject matter jurisdiction.
You're into your rebuttal time, you know. It's all right with me.
If you've got any more questions, I can answer those right back in rebuttal.
Okay.
Great.
From the other sides.
Thank you.
Ms. Walker.
May it please the Court, Melanie Walker on behalf of American National Bank. I'd like to start out by addressing Judge Sykes' question about reconciling Metal Wood and Barnett, because I think that these two cases can be reconciled in this case. Even if you assume that the holding of Barnett is that a non-core claim is not barred by res judicata if it's not brought in a bankruptcy proceeding, that rule wouldn't apply here. There's no question that lien priority claims are core proceedings in bankruptcy. And Matrix's claim here fundamentally is that its lien should have had priority over the bank's lien because the bank engaged in fraud in obtaining lien priority. Therefore, whether it's styled as an equitable subordination affirmative defense, a common law fraud claim, or a RICO claim, it's fundamentally a core claim that could have and should have been brought in the bankruptcy proceeding. In fact, Metalwood and Cropmaker both clearly hold that a party to a bankruptcy proceeding can't sit silently while the court determines the allocation of assets between creditors and then subsequently bring a second lawsuit simply by dressing up its defense as a RICO claim. And nothing in Barnett conflicts with that basic principle. In Barnett, the court simply held that under the particular circumstances of that case, which involved a RICO claim by the trustee against third parties to the bankruptcy, that it was not a core proceeding and was not barred by res judicata. And I think importantly, in Barnett, the outcome of the trustee's RICO claim against Todd would not have undermined any rights previously established by the bankruptcy court. Whereas in Metalwood, and certainly here, if Matrix's claims were allowed to go forward, it would completely undermine the bankruptcy court's ruling that American National Bank's lien had priority.
Barnett's, it states a pretty broad rule of core versus non-core proceedings and the rule of res judicata, and it seems to me that's not quite right, because certainly a non-core proceeding that's litigated to final judgment in the context of a bankruptcy, in other words, that goes to the district court and is adjudicated and affirmed on appeal, is going to have preclusive effect. So that core non-core bright line can't be the right rule.
I agree. I mean, if you look at bankruptcy court jurisdiction, certainly if Matrix's RICO case had been brought in the Stylemaster bankruptcy proceeding, it could have been heard and fully litigated, perhaps not by the bankruptcy court alone, but certainly by some combination of the bankruptcy court and the district court, which is what the majority of circuits have held in looking at res judicata in bankruptcy proceeding.
And in fact, here, that's what we have. And the bankruptcy court made its various rulings in the context of the adversary proceeding and the 363 sale. They were affirmed by the district court. This court affirmed. And the fraudulent scheme was, as I said earlier, based on my reading of the case, heavily litigated in the context of the sale litigation and the adversary litigation on the equitable subordination defense. Whether it was styled as a RICO scheme or not doesn't matter.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. Mr. Queenie did raise a couple of times that his RICO claim in this action is based on both pre-petition and post-petition conduct. And I'd like to address that. Because I really think that if you look at the complaint and you look at the two post-petition predicate acts that are alleged, this is really grasping at straws. The first alleged predicate act is a supposed act of mail fraud having to do with the bank allegedly making a fraudulent statement about whether it still owned the right to prosecute the adversary proceeding. And putting aside sort of the Rule 9 defects with that allegation, first of all, there's no way that Matrix was harmed by whether it should have been, the adversary proceeding should have been prosecuted in the name of JR Plastics as opposed to American National Bank. But also, more importantly, the scheme that, in Matrix's own words, The scheme was to defraud Matrix into extending credit to StyleMaster. That scheme was over when StyleMaster filed for bankruptcy, and nothing in the letter that the bank wrote about whether it had sold the liens or not could have furthered that scheme or covered up that scheme or had any connection to it at all. And the second alleged predicate act, which Mr. Queeney didn't mention, is that American National Bank allegedly extorted Matrix in the adversary proceeding by threatening to file Rule 11 sanctions. And the law is absolutely clear that taking a hard bargaining position or saying you're going to go to the courts is not extortion. So I think that the post-petition fraud that Mr. Queeney alluded to can be sort of easily disposed of.
You've got a backup argument about failure to state a claim.
We do.
To the extent the issue and claim preclusion arguments failed, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the court needs to get there, but RICO contains, as the court well knows, several elements that have to be pled in order to state a claim. And in this case, I think the most obvious defect is that there's just not a pattern of racketeering here. The complaint does not adequately allege two or more predicate acts of racketeering, and even if it did, there's not the continuity that would establish a pattern. The original complaint alleged five mailings that occurred over just a few months and had to do with the routine administration of the loan. Judge Maravich correctly held that those five mailings did not further the scheme to defraud and wouldn't make a pattern of racketeering in any event. And as I've already addressed, the two later acts of alleged racketeering that Matrix tacked on in its amended complaint don't state a claim for either mail fraud or extortion either, and certainly would not create a pattern of racketeering since there's no connection between those alleged acts and the scheme that's allegedly at issue. And finally on that, although we've raised a number of other points in our brief, as far as the conspiracy claim goes, I think it's important to note not only that the complaint only contains very boilerplate allegations of conspiracy. I mean, there are no facts alleged about any agreement between American National Bank and StyleMaster. I mean, this might be most obvious by the fact that there's no person from American National Bank that's named anywhere in the complaint. So it's unclear who at American National Bank is entering into this conspiracy. But beyond that, I think the theory of fraud here is entirely implausible. I mean, the notion that American National Bank is colluding with StyleMaster to hide the fact that American National Bank has a priority lien when American National Bank twice in 1997 and 2001 filed financing statements with the Illinois Secretary of State just completely undermines that notion. And I think that Judge Aspin and Judge Schmetter in the bankruptcy proceedings saw right through that and were able to say, you know, whatever the bank may have done that didn't comply with its own due diligence policies may have put the bank at risk, but it wasn't fraud on StyleMaster's creditors.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Zollner?
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honor, Gateway Park is the landlord. They owned an industrial park and leased space to Style Master, which was the debtor in bankruptcy. This complaint does not allege that Gateway did anything wrong, committed any fraud. The only allegation is that Gateway charged lease or charged rent on a leasehold for office space or factory space in this industrial park. That's not fraudulent. Now, Mr. Queenie made some distinctions about pre-bankruptcy fraud and post-bankruptcy fraud. There's nothing in this complaint that says that Gateway did anything, even charged rent, after the bankruptcy was filed in March of 2002. There's simply nothing alleged here that Gateway did wrong. I'd like to address a couple other issues raised by Mr. Queenie as well with respect to the shareholders. He mentioned that there's a 2002 shareholder lawsuit pending. This same motion for judgment on the pleadings with respect to res judicata and collateral estoppel is pending in that case as well. It just hasn't been ruled upon. In that case, Judge Norgal was advised very early on that the bankruptcy court proceeding was pending with respect to the lien issue. Judge Norgal entered a stay of that case until Judge Schmetterer and Judge Aspin ruled on the lien issue. We filed a status report advising the court that we would like that case stayed until the bankruptcy court ruled. We filed an affirmative defense of res judicata and collateral estoppel, and then we filed the motion for judgment on the pleadings based upon collateral estoppel. So that this whole alleged pre-bankruptcy scheme is not new. It's been raised and asserted by Matrix multiple times. They filed suit in McHenry County. They filed a counterclaim against the shareholders in bankruptcy alleging this fraud. They filed a counterclaim against American National Bank in the adversary proceeding alleging this fraud. They objected to the 363 sale based upon the pre-bankruptcy inventory buildup. They filed a motion to reconsider the 363 sale based upon alleged fraud and collusion and this somehow that there was something wrong with disclosed shareholders bidding at the public sale. Okay, they raised an equitable subordination's affirmative defense in which they alleged fraud. They filed the 2002 case against the shareholders. This is something like the seventh time that Matrix has tried to sue somebody for fraud arising out of transactions that Judge Schmetterer has said were legal, that Judge Aspin has said were legal. The whole issue on lien priority was fully litigated. There were at least two trials on the merits. Went up on appeal to Judge Aspin. It went up on appeal to this court.
What is your response then to Mr. Queenie's assertion that they weren't allowed to present fraud in the bankruptcy proceeding and in fact withdrew the claim of fraud at least in the sale? Your argument is that these issues were litigated. It's not just that they could have been litigated, but they were actually litigated. Is that?
He didn't withdraw the fraud argument in the sale. He filed his objection to the bankruptcy. He filed his motion to convert it. He alleged fraud there. The fact that he didn't call it up for hearing doesn't mean that he withdrew it. And Judge Schmetterer certainly addressed whether or not there was any fraud or collusion in the sale. And you've got to keep in mind that what Mr. Queenie claims as the fraud is the sale. He's not saying that there was not so much fraud during the sale, but that the fraud itself, the sale itself, was a fraud. That's a component of his inventory scheme, that there had to be a judicial sale, something that Judge Schmetterer did. He approved the sale to the disclosed shareholders, and they claim that's fraud. And that's exactly what Meadow Wood says they can't do. They cannot collaterally attack that sale. They can't say the sale was fraudulent after the fact.
It sounds like your principal argument is that the complaint should have been dismissed under 12b-6. You started off by saying there's no allegation of fraud against either party. I think we hear the same from the bank. Is that really your position here?
Well, we raised a 12b-6 motion, which was granted, and then there was an amended complaint filed. And at that time, what we did was we filed a motion for summary judgment based upon the statute of limitations, because this case wasn't filed until March of 2008. Now, at that point, Judge Norgal opened up discovery and said, well, we're going to do some discovery on the summary judgment issue. And so then we went back and raised the res judicata in a motion. And, in fact, I think we did make it in a 12b-6 motion, which he took as a judgment on the pleadings. I can answer whatever questions you've got, but I pretty much said the substance. And that's essentially the substance of our sanctions argument, is this is the seventh time that we've dealt with this. This isn't an accident. This is an attempt to circumvent the bankruptcy court rulings in multiple occasions. All he's done is repackaged and recharacterized the same transactions which were ruled upon by the bankruptcy court and called them schemes. And that's why we're here.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Queeney, how much time? You have 6 minutes remaining.
I took the great pains to go through the record in great detail, and I stand upon what I told you, and that is that there was no litigation on the merits of any fraud claim with respect to the sale.
Explain to me, though, your claim against the bank, the argument that it's not plausible. What possible motive would the bank have for engaging in this fraud, this scheme that you've described?
To get paid fully and to pass on to the trade creditors, including but not limited to Matrix, the debacle known as Stylemaster and JR Plastics. I mean, that debacle, that injury, has gone on since 2002 through 2005. The bank never suffered like Matrix, like Paramount, like those individuals that I name in my complaint, and they're named to show a pattern or continuing threat, which is an element of my RICO claim.
Well, the bank only suffers if it extends credit to Stylemaster without security. I'm not sure how they would have suffered by simply, I mean, your argument that they became a part of a conspiracy by getting what, paid back?
By getting paid back pursuant to their agreement of May 3rd, 2002. The bank has never been injured. The bank has never been injured. Everybody else has been injured. That's motivation enough, I believe.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. But, for example, Judge Schmetterer expressly found that Matrix had made no objection to the sale. So when Learned Counsel says that we litigated that 7 times, I'm telling you again, it was not litigated with respect to the sale. There was, in fact, as Judge Schmetterer found, no objection by Matrix to the sale. And, in fact, whatever objection was filed in a motion to dismiss the bankruptcy was continued until middle of May or June and then dismissed and, again, never litigated. It's only been litigated so far in the RICO 1, in front of George Norgel. With respect to RICO 2, with respect to some of the questions about a 12B6 objection, all I can tell you is that under 12B6, my understanding is I should have a right to replete it. They're trying to do through 12C or their motion for summary judgment on the pleadings what I would have a right to replete. My pleading doesn't say that it's limited to one letter. It gives one letter as an example. Every letter that was transmitted in that bankruptcy adversary proceeding was to further the fraud. How many letters are there? I don't know. Can I allege more of those if I'm given the chance? I do believe I can. So I don't think the 12B6 argument is a fair argument. It's sort of a bootstrap. There's no discovery on this case. With respect to the equitable subordination defense, Judge Aspin is quite clear. Expressly finds, which I believe is sort of the law of the case, that we made the argument in the motion for summary judgment and then withdrew it. So it was never litigated, as the district court found, with respect to the equitable subordination defense. With respect to the undermining of the lien priority ruling, again, the equitable subordination defense was dismissed, stricken, with prejudice, without any discovery. So the whole question of fraud was never raised. It was not discovered. It was not raised. It was not argued. So when he found that there was a superior lien, that finding in August of 2003 has got nothing to do with, for example, the allegations that were existing at the point in time with respect to RICO 1. all of the fraud of RICO in RICO 1 that was filed in August of 2002, none of that was addressed by Judge Smetterer. So with respect to whether it's res judicata or collateral estoppel, as you know, says the issue has to be actually and necessarily litigated. Can't just allude to it that somebody made a suggestion. There has to be an actual and a necessary litigation of it. That never happened. Never happened. I think it would be a tremendous travesty for this court to rule that, having relied upon Barnett versus Stearns, that Matrix should now be penalized. Matrix has filed its RICO complaint. It's a valid complaint. Both complaints have withstood multiple motions to dismiss and are just awaiting the chance to go forward. I don't think that that should be denied to Matrix. Thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel, all counsel, and the case.